Independent journalism needs protection, now more than ever. Leaving a gift to TPR in your will helps ensure thoughtful, fact-based news has a future in Texas. Learn more at tpr.org/legacy.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. School segregation did not end after Brown versus the Board of Education. The 1954 case declared that state laws allowing racial segregation in public schools were unconstitutional. School districts found loopholes to continue segregationist practices in the classroom. Mexican American students fit into that loophole. It was a backfiring of sorts of earlier efforts by the League of United Latin American Citizens to get the U.S. Census to classify Mexican Americans as white in an effort to gain social equality. Cisneros versus Corpus Christi ISD was a 1970 decision that grew out of a challenge by José Cisneros and other parents whose children were attending a neglected formerly all-black school that lacked the resources of wealthier white schools. A new traveling panel exhibit that examines the complexities of this case is on display at San Antonio's Mexican American Civil Rights Institute, or MACRI. Texas Public Radio intern Ivana Vaz Caldera visited the exhibit and spoke to MACRI's executive director, Sarah Zenaida Gould. Gould told Ivana that this case is not well known, as are other cases that challenged desegregation.
The one case most people know is Brown versus Board of Education, pivotal court case from 1954 that recognized that separate is not equal. That was an important precedent-setting case, and it required school districts to start desegregating. However, many school districts found loopholes or ways to delay desegregation. And in Texas, what you see happen is that in many school districts, Mexican American students were legally considered white, and so school districts would integrate by sending either Mexican American students or African American students to predominantly Mexican American or predominantly black schools, and then they would say, it's integrated. The thing is that the federal government was monitoring enrollment at schools in states where they knew segregation was practiced. And what they saw in the reports that Corpus Christi ISD was submitting is that the vast majority of Mexican American students were attending one set of schools. The vast majority of African American students were attending another set of schools. And the vast majority of white students were attending a different set of schools. So they could see the integration was not happening. The school district received a warning letter, and that was seen as an opportunity to file a lawsuit because they hadn't proven that they had desegregated. And so Cisneros versus Corpus Christi ISD was a group of parents, about two dozen parents, African-American and Mexican-American parents, who sued the school district to say, you have not integrated our students. And what's really fascinating about the case is that it was one of the first times that you see a coalition of African-American and Mexican-American parents working together. Up until this point, most desegregation cases involving Mexican Americans made the argument Mexican Americans are legally white, and therefore separating Mexican Americans into separate so-called Mexican schools, that's illegal. That had generally been the legal argument. On the one hand, that did open up opportunities for Mexican American students to, in some cases, attend white majority schools, but it did nothing to break down the real root of the problem of segregation. And so this case is really important for that coalition across Mexican American, African American lines, that we have these two groups working together on the case, and they won.
How long did it take for them to win?
The case took about 2 years. It was filed in 68, and then the judge released his finding. Judge Seal was his name. He released the finding in 1970. Now, it was appealed, and they still lost. So the judge's order to desegregate, to integrate, was required to happen. And it took several years after 1970 to really implement that process. And the process was very controversial and rocky. Of course, there were some people who simply didn't want their kids to go to integrated schools. You had that issue. There was a lot of white flight that happened in Corpus after this court case. So that means that there were a number of white families who simply left inner city Corpus Christi, moved to suburbs where the schools were majority white, just because that's who lived out in the suburbs. Then you also had, Mexican-American parents who said, wait a minute, I don't want to send my kid halfway across town to go to school. I like that they're closer to where they live. I know where they are. But also I'm worried that if I send my kid halfway across town to go to this other school, that they're going to be bullied, that they're going to be mistreated in this place where they don't know anybody. In some cases, some Mexican-American parents, if they could afford it, ended up sending their kids to Catholic schools in order to avoid what they perceived as potential problems. It was controversial. I will just say, I think when you look at the whole history of integration of schools, very few communities had an easy time with the integration process, both because of white flight and because of concerns from parents of color about the safety of their kids. And yet, I think we understood it was not right that students were being forcibly segregated.
To get started on this exhibit, could you explain the process? Because I understand you collaborated with researchers, right?
Yes, it was really serendipitous that we were able to do this project. I was approached a couple of years ago by Steph McDougall, who is an architectural historian, and she had learned about the Cisneros court case and found out that the family home that the Cisneros family lived in on Bluebell Lane in Corpus Christi, that it was still there and that it was nearly untouched from the 1970s. One issue that we have in preserving history is that very few sites connected to Mexican American history have been preserved, and very few are on what's called the National Register of Historic Places. The National Register of Historic Places is a federal program. It's run through the Department of the Interior, which is where the National Park Service is, and is supposed to recognize sites of historic importance across the United States and across topics, across time. Less than 2% of sites on the National Register are related to U.S. Latino history. So when Steph found out about this house, she thought, that would be a great National Register nomination. And she happens to know how to write those nominations. And so she asked me, would we partner with her? Because she wanted to apply for some grants to pay for a researcher to do the historical research that she would need for the National Register nomination. And she knew of a historian who focused on this work. I apologize. She's a sociologist, Dr. Isabella Ariza. She's in Corpus Christi at Del Mar College. And I said, yeah, let's do it. But also, can we add an exhibit component? So the exhibit is one part of this larger project. The other part is the National Register nomination. And so Dr. McDougall will be working on that. And both the exhibit and a big section of the Register nomination are based on Dr. Araiza's research.
Sarah Zenaida Gould is the executive director of MACRI, the Mexican-American Civil Rights Institute in San Antonio. She's speaking with Texas Public Radio intern Ivana Vaz Caldera about the school desegregation case currently being highlighted in a new traveling exhibit on the landmark school desegregation case, Cisneros versus Corpus Christi ISD. The conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for this podcast of Fronteras comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. There has been a long line of school desegregation cases in Texas. Del Rio ISD versus Salvatierra of 1930 ruled that Black, white, and Latino students could be taught in segregated systems according to their race. That was overturned in the 1948 case Delgado versus Bastrop, which ended segregation of Mexican Americans in Texas public schools. Separation was allowed for non-English speaking first graders. The American GI Forum sued the Driscoll Consolidated Independent School District in 1957 for separating and holding back its Mexican-American students, essentially keeping them in first grade for 3 years. These cases and others continued to challenge the segregation of students of color in Texas. A 1970 case, Cisneros versus Corpus Christi ISD, again challenged the segregation of Mexican-American students into separate under-resourced schools. The story of this case and the people behind it is told in a traveling panel exhibit currently on view at the Mexican-American Civil Rights Institute in San Antonio. MACRI Executive Director Sarah Zenaida Gould talks to Texas Public Radio intern Ivana Vaz Caldera about the long struggle to desegregate Texas classrooms.
What we see in the Corpus Christi schools in the late 60s was similar to what we saw in other communities that had segregated schools. The white schools had better resources, better facilities, better activities even for the students. The African American and Mexican American schools had far fewer resources, older facilities, older equipment, or were completely lacking equipment in some cases. Part of that had to do with the way that funding was allocated to the neighborhood schools. The funding was based on the local taxes. And so if one neighborhood was lower income, then the amount of tax money coming out of that neighborhood was less than a wealthier neighborhood. So it's related to that too. But what they found in this court case, and they dug into all of these statistics and studies about school enrollment at Corpus Christi ISD, and what they found is that there was very much a clear intentionality behind sending the Mexican-American students to one set of schools, the African-American students to another set of schools, and the white students to a third set of schools. And actually, the court case cites a number of studies, including a book that was called Mexican Americans in School, A History of Educational Neglect, that was written by Thomas Carter and published in 1970, but he had been working on gathering all of these statistics for a while. They actually cited his work in the court case. So this case was not only building on the legal precedent of earlier court cases such as Brown versus Board of Education, but it is also building on an increased amount of data that social scientists had been gathering about school segregation.
You never really know as an outsider how much work goes into a case, right? It's not just the parents putting in their own opinions. They did the research.
Yes, so much research has to go into this so you can show evidence that it's not just coincidence.
Yeah.
That these students are being sent to this school or that school, that there's something is happening behind the scenes, and that there is an actual impact on the students when they're separated in this way. So yes, there was a lot of research, and in this case, they had a really fantastic lawyer, a man named James De Anda. And James De Anda was a Mexican-American from Houston. He was a World War II veteran. When he was a brand new lawyer, really young, he was the youngest member of the legal team to argue Hernandez versus Texas. Hernandez versus Texas was another 1954 case, same year as Brown versus Board of Education, but it was a case out of Edna, Texas, down in the valley, and it was a case where a gentleman had been accused of murder, found guilty by an all-white jury, and sentenced to 99 years in prison. The lawyers in that case appealed the conviction, saying he was not tried by a jury of his peers because in this long history of Edna, Texas, there has never been a Mexican-American on a jury. That court case made it to the Supreme Court, and James De Anda was, again, the youngest member of the legal team. They had a whole team of lawyers. But that was an incredibly important court case because it extended the 14th Amendment to Mexican-Americans, recognizing Mexican-Americans as what they called a class apart. But also, it changed rules here in Texas so that now you had to allow Mexican-Americans to serve on juries. It's a really important court case. Fast forward to the late 60s. At this point, James De Anda has been a lawyer in multiple desegregation court cases over the years, and he's become something of an expert on desegregation court cases. And so he was the lead lawyer in the Cisneros court case. It's important to recognize him just because of how much he did. He was in private practice, but he would volunteer his time or he would set aside time to go and do these cases because of what they meant to him. And they also had support from MALDEF in this case. MALDEF was a new organization. They were only a couple of years old by the time this case comes to trial, an organization that was originally founded here in San Antonio. And the NAACP was also involved in this court case, a very old African-American civil rights organization. So this really, they just had a powerhouse of people coming together to help them with this case. And again, it was important because we had this coalition of people that we hadn't really seen come together for a case like this before. But also, in the judge's final ruling, what he said was, it is unconstitutional to discriminate against students for whatever reason, their race, their ethnicity, whatever type of category you might come up with. You cannot separate students based on something like that.
As you were putting this exhibit together, my first question is, how long did it take? And then leading into that, where did you acquire the artifacts to show it to the community?
Let's see. We started this project, I think, about 2 years ago. And between myself and the other two people who were really involved in this, Dr. McDougall and Dr. Ariza, we had been, in theory, working on it for about 2 years. And the type of exhibits that we have been focusing on for purposes of getting information out to the community to increase knowledge and awareness of the ways that Mexican Americans have helped advance democracy. We make exhibits that are extremely portable and lightweight, and they can just be collapsed and then popped up in another location. So we don't rely too much on artifacts. One day, I hope that we will move into a point in our history where we have both exhibits that are artifact heavy and these traveling exhibits. But right now we've really been focusing on these traveling exhibits. So they're basically two-dimensional. So we're always looking for photographs so that we can have more visuals. So you've got a combination of text and visuals. But I don't really have any artifacts for this exhibit other than we did get a copy of this book, Mexican Americans in School, A History of Educational Neglect, which was a book that's cited in the court case. So when you see the exhibit, you will see who were some of the people involved in the court case, both the parents, some of the kids. You'll see the judge, Judge Seal. Judge Seal, in addition to this case that was really important, a few years later, he was involved in a different case that involved undocumented students. And that was an important case because he found that there was nothing in the Constitution to prevent providing education to undocumented students. Again, the idea is to introduce people to the case, who some of the major people were involved in the case, people like James DeAnda, but also some kind of essential concepts. One of the things that I think sometimes if you're not well-versed in this history, you might have some confusion about is, well, why were there separate schools for Mexican Americans? For many Americans, we're aware that school segregation is part of our history, but we might think that it only impacted African American students. In this exhibit, we tried to break down what is de jure segregation and what is de facto segregation. So African Americans were legally allowed to be segregated. We call that de jure segregation. By law, they were allowed to be segregated. And that resulted in all of these laws that we call Jim Crow laws. For Mexican Americans, technically, we were considered white. But in practice, Mexican Americans experienced segregation, not just in Texas, but all across the Southwest. And so we call that de facto segregation. And some scholars have referred to that also as Juan Crow. So we try to break down some of this vocabulary for people. Certainly, if you've had the opportunity to take a Mexican American studies class or an ethnic studies class, maybe in college, you've been introduced to these concepts. A lot of Americans have never had that opportunity. So we're trying to provide those little knowledge tidbits and help people better understand the history of civil rights in the U.S.
Sarah Sanaida Gould is executive director of the Mexican American Civil Rights Institute, MACRI. She was speaking with Texas Public Radio intern Ivana Paz Caldera. MACRI is hosting the traveling panel exhibit Cisneros versus Corpus Christi ISD, The Long Fight to End School Segregation. It will remain on display at the MACRI Visitor Center in San Antonio through November 26th. See images from the exhibit at tpr.org. You've been listening to Fronteras. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.